Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Mbuga, and this evening we'll talk about the recent summit of the African Union. And tonight, I'll be joined momentarily by my colleague, Blessing Zulu, from VOA's Zimbabwe service. And also joining us is Dewa Mazinga, a human rights lawyer and political analyst. He's joining us by phone from Johannesburg, South Africa. Good evening, Dewa. Hello. I think we may have a problem getting our guest from Johannesburg. But we'll keep trying to get him online, and as soon as we have him, he'll be joining us here on Reporters Roundtable. And meanwhile, we're still trying to get in touch with him. As I said, our topic tonight is going to be the recent summit, the 24th session of the Summit of the African Union, which concluded in Addis Ababa last week with closing remarks from the newly elected chairperson of the African Union, President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe. I'm told now we have Mr. Dewa Mazinga. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I can hear you clearly. Hello.
Hello. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How is Johannesburg?
Well, I'm actually in Zimbabwe, in Harare at the moment.
Oh, you're in Harare right now?
Yes.
Very good. And congratulations on acquiring the new chairman of the African Union.
Well, it's a huge challenge. I'm not sure if Zimbabwe is up to the task, and it should be congratulated at all. It's a dent, perhaps, on the credibility and on broader issues in terms of the push for human rights and democracy. But we can talk about that.
Yes, we'll be talking about that momentarily as we wait for my other colleague to come in. Meanwhile, let me get your general feel about the concluded summit. They came up with a lofty agenda. What they called Agenda, I think, Agenda 2063, with a lot of ambitious items on the agenda. What was the general feel of the summit? Do you think people should take them seriously?
Well, I do not think that the African Union leaders take themselves seriously in the first place. So it would be amiss for anyone to take them seriously when they do not appear to be taking themselves seriously. And I think some of these lofty goals and ideas that they are putting are not bad per se, but the huge challenge is in implementation and in the demonstration of political will. And this is where many of these things falter. And that's where my concern is, that there is a huge gap between aspirations and what happens on the ground, between normative principles and documents and practice by African leaders and their governments.
Yeah, talking of the lack of the, or their sort of, I mean, they lofted goals and aspirations. They talked of how to fight Ebola. They talked about World Trade Organization, growth and AGOA, African Growth and Opportunity Act, and many other things. The issue that has been coming up over and over is lack of financing. If you can't finance these projects, then why at all bother to put them on paper?
Well, yes, that's the challenge. But you see, beyond this, the lack of finances, I think one of the key things that we need to look at is a failure to properly manage, prioritize, and account for the available resources within Africa.
Yes. I see there.
Yes. I'm saying, so the challenge is also about the distribution and of resources, the accountable use of resources that are available, and the commitment to transparency and accountability. I think there is a measure of comfort within and among African leaders with this mentality of begging all the time to say, can someone give us the money we need? We can do with more money, but failing to properly account for the resources in hand.
I see. Let me welcome my other guest, my colleague, Blessing Zulu from VOA's Zim service. He just had the tail end of Dewa's contribution from South Africa. He mentioned resources and lack of transparency and accountability, mm-hmm. and this mentality of begging, where African leaders are fond of going around the world with the ball in hand. And many people have observed that there's something unique mm-hmm. among African leaders. These are among the wealthiest people in the world. But they're good at begging because they don't live large. If somebody who have seen them on summits or at the UN, they all jetting in their own private jets, they live large, they shop in Europe and Asia, but then turn around and for the simplest of problems, they have to beg. Do you find that intriguing or something?
Yeah, I think there's a serious problem with that. I think that mentality should come to an end, and there must be a promotion of domestic philanthropy amongst Africans. Mm. And you see that the headquarters in Addis Ababa was built by the Chinese, the African Union headquarters, more than 200 million. It was the Chinese, and most of the programs there are actually run by the European Union. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about the issue of security, it's the American government that is actually funding the African Union. So that I think is really problematic, and I agree with Mr. Mavinga.
Mr. Mavinga, further to that point, not to belabor the point so far, but I mean, why should these leaders sit down and they don't seem to be able to solve their own problems on the continent? If you look at the Ebola crisis in West Africa, they had to appeal for help. Any security problem on the continent, they have to appeal for help. Even as Blessings mentions here, even their own headquarters, they had to open their hands and have somebody construct that even for them. Do they feel embarrassed or do they feel okay with the status quo?
I think the tragedy of African leadership and the way they manage resources is that it appears there is no embarrassment in the beggar mentality and beggar status. They seem to actually thrive on it. And I think one of the major problems that is related to that is a level of indifference among the leadership or even a lack of care and concern for the plight of their people. So you would imagine that the Boko Haram crisis in Nigeria would cause sleepless nights for the leadership. But it does not appear so, because I think at some level, political office is viewed as a vehicle with which to become rich overnight, with which to amass resources. That's why you would see that in African countries we have had cases where reportedly some of the leaders are richer than their countries. For example, in Zimbabwe, we have very rich politicians, but presiding over a collapsed economy, presiding over a collapsed health system. And these rich politicians can afford to jet off to Singapore for medical treatment for simple ailments when their own health system is totally collapsed. So I think it's an absolute lack of care and concern for the welfare of the people that they are meant to lead. This is why they can actually thrive on begging. I remember the other time I was talking to a very senior politician in Zimbabwe about the plight of flood victims, for example. And his first response was, is government able to get some funds through this problem? So this is the challenge, that everything is supposed to be spinned into a benefit, into material benefit for the leadership and not for the people they serve or they purport to serve.
Yes, Blessings. You see, that's a point well taken, and it's a common feeling on the continent. Uh-huh. But where do the people come in? Because like we just mentioned, these lofty goals of the AU, they agreed on blah 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 how to fight everything on the earth, but then they don't seem to involve the people, and the people don't seem to believe that what they are committing themselves to will be achieved. Where do the people come in? The common man on the continent.
I think that is the tragedy of the African Union. It does not involve the people at the end of the day. It's just a talking workshop for the boys. The majority of them are actually men. Even non-governmental organizations are not even allowed to have that much of a say. You know, these are closed-door sessions that they hold together, but without any input from the people. And you also raised a very important point on the issue of, you know, a simple ailment. You know, one has to fly out. No wonder why, if you look at most of the African leaders, when they are sick, they die in Europe.
Yes.
Just to the north of Zimbabwe, Michael Sata, he was in Britain. You know, it's a vote of no confidence, even in their own health systems. The other Zambian president, Manawasa, was also in France. The Ethiopian president, I think he also died. The Ethiopian prime minister, rather, also died, I think, in Brussels. So therein lies the problem for African leaders. And this disconnect between them and the ordinary people.
I see. You want to jump in on the issue of where the people, how they come in, the ordinary man and woman on the continent?
The location of the people in the political matrix on the continent. Well, you see, it's about the idea of legitimacy and where do African leaders think they derive their power from. And I believe many of them derive it from the use of force and coercion, which is resident in the security forces of their country. And therefore, when these leaders believe that the citizenry does not matter when it comes to voting, because people can be beaten into submission or they can strike fear in the heart of citizens to vote in a particular way, it means the people are relegated in terms of their importance in the day-to-day political life of the nation. This is why you would find that the leadership often takes their people for granted because of the awareness that they have behind them, backing of the use of force to retain political power and to retain their authority over these people. So in a way, the continued use of security forces in electoral affairs, in civilian affairs, relegate the citizens to the back room, and also ensures that, you know, gives this the leadership a false sense of security within which they can actually say they can afford to treat their citizens with disdain, because they feel their political power is not derived from the principle of the democratic principles of free and fair voting. This is why you would find that dictatorship, the looting of national resources in these countries across Africa, goes hand in hand with the use of violence around elections and electoral periods.
Blessings. There are those who say some of African leaders, quite a number of them, they have mastered this art of ruling their country as personal estates. As Mr. Mazinga says there, they have full control of the coercions forces of coercion, forces of security, army, police, intelligence, and then they have the key to the ATM of the nations. They have the key to central treasury.
Yeah.
So they seem to be not accountable to anybody.
That's very true. I mean, if you look at the, I don't want to call them elections, you know, in most of these African countries, they've resorted to what we may call electoralism, you know. You are just going to an election. It's just a ritual,
yes,
you know, but the outcome is known. You know, the voters are not important, but what is important is the person who is counting the votes. That's where we are. And then you are talking about the use of resources that they've access to the ATM. We have a very funny Shona saying that you know, it's like, you know, hyenas, you know, are fond of eating corpses. So literally what you do, what we are doing to, with our leaders is to leave them in charge of the mortuary. You know what is going to happen. That is exactly what they are doing.
Yes.
So the problem with resources is even within their own parties. Mm. You see, there's a system of patronage. You have a very good example in Zimbabwe where they took farms from the minority whites to allegedly give the farms to the majority blacks. Mm. But you know what they did? They started the elites parceling out. This one is 16 farms. The same thing that the people were fighting against. Mm. This one is 10 farms. This one is 15. You know why we know that they have these many farms? Journalists were writing about them. They were denying. And then there was a fallout in the ruling party. Mm. And now, you know, they are turning against each other to say, oh, by the way, you know, that's how the it works. You know, so they start saying, okay, if you are not with us, we are going to take, you know, the farms that we gave to you, this system of patronage. Mm. So even within the ruling parties, there is no internal democracy. You know, you have leaders distributing inputs, farming inputs, for example, and if you are not a supporter. But these are state resources.
Yeah,
you
know,
they use them for...
Actually, I know of one African leader who moves around with a bullion van dishing out bags of money to
people. Exactly, yeah.
And this money got from the National Treasury. This is taxpayers' money.
Exactly.
But he distributes as if it's personal money.
Exactly.
Well, gentlemen, let's take a short break. We'll come back to continue our discussion of the recent African Union Summit in Addis Ababa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
And AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the recent African Union Summit. Our panelists are my colleague, Blessing Zulu, from VOA Zimbabwe Service, and Dewa Mazinga, a political analyst and human rights lawyer, is joining us from Harare in Zimbabwe. And I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here in Studio 9. Now, gentlemen, Africa has been rising, but success is primarily measured by economic growth and development. Discourse on democratization is far less prominent than at the onset of the new millennium. At the same time, many African states are forging even deeper ties with emerging powers that seem to place little value on democracy and human rights. So my question to both of you, gentlemen, are Africa leaders still committed to advancing good governance, accountability, and transparency? Let me begin here with Blessing.
I don't think so. If we take a paper and check what has happened, we can see that we are regressing. But of course, there are some countries that are doing well. I don't know. South Africa used to be a shining example, but not so much with Mr. Zuma, Mr. Jacob Zuma. There have been many reports of corruption. Mr. Mavinga, maybe you can add to that because you are the one who is usually in Johannesburg. Mm. But it has not been all that good. But at least, you know, the good thing is at least there are term limits in most of these African countries. So at least we know that after 10 years, you know, two terms, leaders will be leaving. And then hopefully we get new leaders. But which I say is a positive step, because previously, if you look at the Zimbabwe situation where there were no term limits for the president, you know, Mr. Mugabe has been in power since 1980.
Yes.
And luckily, the new constitution now says limits him to two terms.
Two terms effective when?
After this. Mr. Mavinga is the lawyer.
Let him take it over to you, Mr. Mavinga. Tell us, should we expect any more anything on advancing good governance, accountability, and transparency?
Well, the challenge is that there is a perception which I have observed among African leaders of viewing values of good governance, transparency, democracy, and human rights as being predominantly alien and Western and anti-African culture. There is this thing that perhaps in terms of African culture, democracy does not work. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it was President Mugabe at some point who said, in Africa, democracy is a difficult proposition. So they believe that it's cultural, that a leader is a leader for life. This idea of chiefs being born, being and having to die in office. This is why you would find that in Zimbabwe, President Mugabe turns 91 this month. He barely walks it only when he was coming from Addis. Yesterday, he fell at the airport.
I thought he was kissing the ground.
The idea of dying in office, they think is African. They think that is what is African. Also in South Africa, blessing you, you made reference to President Zuma. He is on record as saying things like corruption are Western. The idea that there can be something that is termed corruption. He has been quoted as saying that. So that is the challenge, that these values are seen as inconvenient garments that were inherited from colonial masters. You would find that particularly in Anglophone Africa, when the colonial master Britain was leaving, they negotiated constitutions with bills of rights and things like that. So, and the African leaders said, let us accept these things, but we do something else on the ground. And that attitude continues to fester and to be practiced across Africa, where the constitution says entirely one thing, but practice is another. This is why you would find that at the moment for Zimbabwe, for South Africa, these countries have progressive constitutions with expansive provisions on human rights. But these are not implemented. The citizens are not enjoying these values because practice is something else. Even the issue of women's empowerment, when there was this fight internally within ZANU-PF about Mugabe's succession, and when Mugabe turned on his longtime vice president, Mrs. Joyce Mujuru, he was actually talking about why he found it so offensive that it would be a woman who dares challenge him. You know, so it's not about, you know, what is on paper. It's about what they take as African leaders to be their real values. You know, when they say, well, for the sake of the international community or for the sake of the outside world, this is what we project ourselves to be in terms of our values. But in our own backyard, we do something totally different because now we are, we can be ourselves, and Africanity is contradictory to human rights values or to democracy or to issues of equality. So it remains a huge challenge, and we are miles away in terms of genuine commitment to human rights values, to transparency, to accountability, and to democratic principles and values.
Yes.
And maybe just to add to that, I think the tragedy is also that if you look at the African Union, there is no peer review mechanism. You know, it's something that they proposed when they launched it, you know, led, of course, by Thabo Mbeki. But you know, these are just ideas.
Yes.
And when there was an election in Zimbabwe, Mbeki, there was a report that was conducted by South African judges, which said that the election in Zimbabwe was not free and fair. And the South African government, under Mbeki, under Zuma, was not willing to release that report. You see, now we have contradictions. And you have these people who are saying we want to promote a peer review mechanism in the African continent. We don't want outsiders to come and tell us, you know, what to do. But the African leaders cannot just criticize themselves.
Spirit of brotherhood.
Yes.
And now, gentlemen, briefly, I know the chairmanship of the AU is rotational. But what do you read in the election of Mr. Robert Mugabe, 91 years old, and next week you say, been power since 1980. Is there anything you can read in this? Or what vision would the organization have with such a patriotic leader like Robert Mugabe?
Well, if I may come in,
yes.
The problem with this development is that it simply shows that for the African Union, it's all about appearance. It's all about some kind of lip service to their own perception of African values. And to this misconception that it is possible to appease a dictatorship by offering them all these kinds of triggers and leadership to induce good behavior. That is not possible. It also possibly could be the idea that this is a swan song as President Mugabe walks into the sunset just to bear with him and let him be. But probably it has a huge dent in terms of the African Union's credibility and commitment to human rights values. It says that for the African leaders, brotherhood is more important. Their own African solidarity is much more important than the idea of pushing the ideals of Africa, the advancement of human rights. Because when you look at President Mugabe's human rights scorecard, democracy scorecard, surely these are enough to exclude him from, even though it is ceremonial, rotational, surely that would have been enough to exclude him. But it shows a total lack of commitment and the spineless approach that the African Union leaders have had, where they find it more satisfying, perhaps, to say they are disagreeing completely and they are saying no to the positions of the West by putting Mugabe front and center of their policies and to make him a face of the African Union to spite the West.
I see.
But again, this is being hypocritical in my view.
Yes, so Blessings, you think the current chairperson of the AU has the moral authority to blame somebody for human rights violations or for not holding free and fair elections?
Talking to members of Mr. Mugabe's party, they are saying he has the experience, he has the wisdom at this juncture. He is the man for the job. He's the best foot forward for Africa. But of course, many do not agree, like what Mr. Mavinga is saying, because democracy is in tatters in Zimbabwe. So, I mean, yeah. What can he go and tell a neighboring country or any African country for that matter about democracy when all the elections that have been held in Zimbabwe since 1980 have been disputed?
Mm-hmm. So we're out of time. So in a word or two, Blessings, what future for the AU?
I don't know. The good thing is that it's not a life presidency or a life chairmanship at the AU. It's a rotational, and after a year, somebody will come and take over from Mr. Mugabe. And I hope the AU transforms to institute peer review mechanisms to benefit all Africans.
I see. Can you use 10 seconds, Mr. Mavinga, to give me the future of AU in just about 10 seconds.
I think the future of the AU lies in a new generation of leadership. The current crop of old leaders will not take the AU forward. So it is about a new generation with a new thinking, a new vision, and new values.
I see. Well, thank you very much. That's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thank you to my colleague, Blessing Zulu, VOA Zimbabwe Service. And thank you, Dewa Mazinga, a political analyst and human rights lawyer. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. Bye.
You're welcome. Our producer has been Jackson Mavunganyi, and our engineer tonight was Michael Dubinsky. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.vonews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight, and I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.